Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Now it's time for a Friday gathering. This week I'm joined by Fine Gael TD for Dublin Rathdown and Minister of State for International Development and the Diaspora, Neil Richmond, Aintu leader and Meath West TD, Pather Tobin, Sunday Times political editor Jennifer Bray, and journalist and commentator Brenda Power. And you're all welcome. Thank you for coming in today. Listen, before we get to the topics of the week, I just want to turn to something that happened on the programme earlier. Neil, your reaction to Michael O'Leary's endorsement on this programme for your Fine Gael colleague, Mairead McGuinness, as our next president. Do you welcome that, given the kerfuffle that happened the last time at the general election when he was behind Peter Burke and the headlines were all dominated by what he said about teachers?
Well, I'm married to a teacher, so I have to be very careful.
You do?
But no, look, we're opening nominations for presidential candidate on Monday. I believe Mairead is considering it. I don't know if she's going for it. If Michael O'Leary wants to endorse it, he's a free man. I think he did note himself that Peter Burke did go on to top the poll and bring in a running mate. So maybe those comments, we all have to take a step back.
Well, it was considered that it derailed, though, the Fine Gael campaign, certainly in the early stages. And I see Jen Bray beside you nodding her head to that. I mean, would you want him to endorse Mairead McGuinness if she's your candidate?
Well, I don't think we can stop him.
And I think you remember that. It's not a ringing endorsement of his endorsement, right?
No, but look here, I did fly Ryanair this week, so I'm not that much of a critic. But equally, whoever our candidate is will be superb. I'm particularly close to Mairead, so if she does decide to go for run for it, I'll certainly be endorsing her and going out health and leather to get her elected, because she'd be an excellent president. And whatever Michael O'Leary says is up to him.
Does Aintu have a candidate for president?
We don't. We have been speaking to a number of people and we are actively speaking to a couple of very interesting
characters.
Tell us
who, will you? Because we're all just hearts are broken trying to find out.
But I think there's going to be a couple of people who are interesting who are going to emerge in the next week, because we've been talking to them. I know they've been talking to other parties and independents in Leinster House as well.
But names that we have heard up to now?
Names that you've heard up to now. But I'm not at liberty to say it wouldn't be fair in them and the process too. But I think next week is going to be interesting.
Mm. Jen, what do you think? Brenda, what do you think?
Is that a candidate for Aintu specifically?
No, on this occasion it won't be but it'll be a person who we share some values with.
On the left, that left kind of candidate?
I wouldn't say this person's probably in a kind of a centrist position.
And are there a few parties endorsing this person?
Well, I know this individual is talking to at least one other political party and is talking to a number of independents as well.
A man or a woman?
I'm not giving you any more information after
just
that.
Just trying to get 20 questions.
I could see Sunday's edition coming together before my eyes.
I think the potential candidates thought that by keeping their heads down over the summer, the chances of them being subject to the bear pit that it will inevitably be might be avoided. But from the story in the Times this morning about Mairead McGuinness's expenses, that doesn't seem to be the case. Nature and the political journalism abhors a vacuum, and it seems to me as though anybody whose name is even remotely mentioned, Pather, so you have thrown some people to the wolves there already, is going to be subject to that.
So will we know this name by this time next week? Or over the weekend?
I cannot tell the future. My crystal ball is just not operating properly at the moment.
But you're supposed to be working on it with this person, right?
I'll go as far to say that there is a couple of interesting characters who are, I think, would make good candidates, who would make a significant impact in the campaign. And I imagine that we will find out by this time next week whether they're going to it's going to be public or not. But I will say, on the Michael O'Leary issue, I do think it is interesting that there's a little bit of embarrassment about his support for Mairead McGuinness from Fine Gael here. But
I'm not embarrassed, Pater.
Well,
I'm just stating it clearly.
You did find it hard to kind of endorse his endorsement of the Fine Gael candidate, and
because we don't have a candidate yet, Pater.
Well,
and I'm not endorsing any candidates.
The point is that Michael O'Leary is very close to where Fine Gael are politically speaking in this country, and I do think Michael O'Leary is a fine businessman, etc. But in terms of necessarily running a country, I don't think the same values should be used in running a country in terms of necessarily small government or increasingly privatisation of the health service or the lack of proper investment in the education system, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes' time as well. I do think that those values are actually at the heart of Fine Gael's approach to a lot of issues, even though they mightn't like to say it out loud.
Jen, you're taking notes there. Is that for your own paper on the presidential candidate whose name we don't know yet?
I'd love to pretend that we're so organised that all the stories are written and filed. But yeah, I'm taking notes. I think it would be really interesting, obviously, the nominations for Fine Gael. Be interesting to see if Sean Kelly puts his name forward. My understanding is that he wants to, then that he believes in Fine Gael there should be a contest and a competition. But what I've been told is there is a view in Fine Gael that Mairead is the golden kind of candidate and that's who the majority want. So will they facilitate a competition or not? And Fianna Fáil is very interesting as well. Micheál Martin is in Japan this week and he made a comment to journalists about we have to work through this still, but we might not run a candidate, which I thought was an interesting thing to put out there after Mary Hannafin put her name forward and made kind of the case for her candidacy on the Brendan O'Connor show on Sunday. So I do agree with Brendan O'Connor. The issue is here, we have a whole summer stretching ahead of us as political journalists. There's no Dáil. Lots of politicians are on holidays. They don't answer their phone. So we will find stories wherever we can. And if there's candidates who have announced, we'll want to interview them. We'll want to know about them. And according to our readership figures, people want to read about it too.
But even if they haven't announced, I mean, Mairead McGuinness hasn't announced, and yet that's a headline in the Irish Times.
It's a remarkable headline when it's just a statement of fact. Mm. Politician claims expenses for office expenses. We all do it. If you have a political career for 20 years, it's easy to be a big number on it. Everything was above board and in line with the European Parliament, the European Commission. But I will, Jen, I'll always answer your call.
Oh, great.
You know, there's some who say Fianna Fáil have to run a candidate, given where they are electorally, that it would be really important for them in this election to do it. But you're taking that as a signal from Micheál Martin that maybe he doesn't feel that way.
Yeah, because he also made these other comments, and like I do try to read between the lines about how the office of the presidency is not necessarily, shouldn't be viewed politically per se as aligned to a political party or a political campaign, even though the process for picking a candidate is very much political. And we'll find out in the next couple of days how the parties of the left, our so-called left, will handle that. So I kind of read between the lines and wondered, do Fianna Fáil want to sit this one out? Is it a matter of finance? Is it a matter of it not being worth the political capital? Is it a matter of not having your party dragged into headlines over a quiet summer recess? And what does Mary Hannafin have to say
and
about it?
And tell me now, Pat, I'll come back to you. What are you hearing from Sinn Féin at this
stage? I did a piece on Sinn Féin a couple of weeks ago where I kind of looked into what was happening in the party. And one of the really interesting things is after the general election, I remember coming on your show to talk about the kind of post-mortem afterwards. One of the things that the party members told the leadership was that you're not listening to the grassroots of the party enough. You're not talking to us. You're kind of getting involved with, and as one candidate said, armchair generals running the show. So what they've tried to do since then is restructure things and really involve the grassroots more. And the biggest way they've done this so far is on the presidency. So what they've done is this lengthy public consultation with the grassroots upwards. And they gave the party four options for the presidency. The first is completely backing a candidate of the left, financing, helping, getting involved in the entire campaign. The second was tacitly backing a candidate of the left. So back them, but not super involved. Mm-hmm. The third is running their own candidate. And the fourth was sitting out on the sidelines. And from what I've been told, the direction of travel that the party, that the grassroots want, is to back a candidate of the left, supported by other parties, not just because it makes sense politically, but also because it shows that you know, unity they've been trying to show.
Heather, are they in your gang then?
Well, we're going to decide on the basis of the individual and the values that they hold. Yeah. And I think actually this is what...
But is Sinn Féin part of the conversation around the person that you're looking at?
We're not part of any conversation with Sinn Féin in relation to a candidate, and that's the truth. I'll be honest, we have a difficult relationship with Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin, I don't know, because of the history maybe of A&2,
I know, but people can have difficult relationships, but then they can facilitate things as well.
And I'm very happy to actually facilitate. I actually think those relationships shouldn't matter as much as the bigger questions that we're looking at. But I think the Fianna Fáil situation is interesting because for many ways they owned the presidency for most of the last century. And it is, I suppose, indicative of the fading of Fianna Fáil in recent years that, you know, they don't even have the gumption for a battle over the presidential election. And I do think the presidential election is important because in many ways the president encompasses the values of the society at a given time. And I think a debate about those values is a really important and beneficial debate for a society to have.
Well, we'll talk to them when they're here about why they are and are not running a candidate. Now, listen, we went down a whole path there that we hadn't intended to, but I want to come back to the issue that really did dominate the news this week, and this was on the student fees. And it's hard to know whether people are going to be paying 3,000 in registration fees in September or October, or they're not. Neil, do you have the answer to that?
Well, I think it's quite clear to say what the process is. The last 3 years, we've reduced the registration fee by €1,000 through a cost of living measure. Obviously, with the changing global economic environment, we've quite clearly said that cost of living measures aren't responsible. However, what Minister Lawless is going to do in the next couple of days and weeks, because we are coming up to the budget, is present a series of option papers. The vast majority of people who do pay the registration fee do it by instalments anyway. And what we've been able to do over the last couple of years is we've announced the budget, which is long after most third level institutions come back. And we've been able to, therefore, people have either got a rebate or they've been able to not pay the future.
So people will get the €1,000 off. You just can't say that now.
Well, it's a budgetary decision. It would be irresponsible to guarantee something in the budget this time. It's the same way it's irresponsible to criticise a budget before we've even actually had the pre-budget meetings. We're quite clear, as are our partners in Fianna Fáil, indeed the Independents, in our programme for government commitment, that we're committed to reducing the student contribution fee.
Yeah, that was in the programme for government. Then the minister last weekend says that we were actually going to pay 3,000 as opposed to 2,000 last year. It was really messy.
Well, I take that on the chin. But what I will say for the minister is he's made a quite a clear, distinct clarification between a cost of living measure and what we actually want to do and make this permanent. And this is really, really important at this time, because when I talk about the global economic situation, and we're all wondering what's going to happen with tariffs in the next couple of days, well, I certainly am. Ireland's biggest selling point at the moment, it's not our taxation. Our biggest selling point economically is our workforce. We have literally the most educated workforce in the world. The reason why large multinationals want to come here, the reason why people want to trade here, the reason why other people want to move here is we have such an educated workforce because we have such a good higher education system.
But you've got to respect that workforce and you've got to tell them what they're going to be paying in September. It's not that far away. You know, these are the people we're talking about. It is the workforce who pay this.
Absolutely. And I think they all respect and understand that this is a budgetary process. This isn't something that a government can just announce. And what we are going to be quite clearly laying out over the summer is an option paper. And the decision will be made quite clear to people coming forward in the autumn what exactly the situation will be. We've done this over the last 3 years, by the way, Claire. Mm-hmm. We've reduced the fee €1,000 per year, and it's worked out perfectly well, and I'm no doubt that it will going forward.
So the context of this is, before an election the government dropped fees, and after the election they talk about putting up the fees. The context of this is the fees were at €2,000, and then in January in the programme for government, the government says we're going to seek to reduce them further. The context of this is the fees have to be paid for large part before the budget. So it's not just a budget decision. So the fees have to be paid in September. And the idea that in a cost of living crisis, the government is saying, we will increase one of your costs by 33%. If the ESB, if you know any of the utilities were saying in the middle of the summer, we're going to increase your fees by 33% in a cost of living crisis, the same level of shock and awe would exist in the general public in relation to this. It is, I think, a little bit of the dysfunction within the government at the moment. We're seeing the two major parties actually fighting with each other on this currently in public, which is quite messy as well. And I think at this stage, the government should just say the fees are going to remain at €2,000 in relation to this. And we're going to adhere to our programme for government promises and our pre-election position.
Brenda, what do you think? How much do you think it should be in September?
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of universal benefits. And I mean, I, as a single parent, I put 5 kids through college on my own when the fees were 3,000. And I know for one thing, you get a full tax rebate if you have 2 children in college at the same time for the second to subsequent kids. I mean, I think if I heard people ring...
That's a lot of money to find, though. It is, if you have multiple children in college at the same time.
It is, but the second, you get a full rebate. You get a full tax rebate on the second.
Okay.
On the second
and
fee.
Subsequent.
And subsequent fees. Yeah. And the other point is, I mean, I heard James Lawless, and I thought it was courageous of him to call in to Drive Time, and he said he was responding to some callers to Liveline, and he said, look, some of those people clearly should be benefiting from the SUSE grants. So it would seem to me that the way to go is to beef up or at least reduce the threshold for grants, for support, because you are going to be giving
money. The income threshold is going up to 115,000 now per household. There is an increase in that from September. So you're saying that's the way to cut it.
Well, that's the way to go. I'm coming in here, Claire. I passed several 252 cars. I know I'm driving through a pretty affluent enclave, but at the same time, there are a lot of people with a lot of money in this country, and there are people who are struggling. We must find a better way of distributing it.
Mm-hmm. Jen, but what do you think politically? Because Pather characterised this as sort of a row within the coalition. Is that fair, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a mid-level spot. I don't think that it definitely exists, and there was genuine, I suppose, alarm after James Lawless' initial comments at the weekend. And there was definitely anger within Fine Gael about this. I don't think it's on the higher end of things, but it definitely has been rumbling. And it dominated Leaders all week, and it was on Liveline and dominated all the radio shows, and it was pretty much all that politicians were talking about in the Dáil as well. I think realistically, what's going to happen is that they're going to have to reduce the fees politically. Now, that's what I'm told, is that one way or the other, they'll have to do it. Whether they do it through the kind of cut you saw previously is unlikely, because if they're not having a cost of living package in the budget, it'll have to be a permanent measure. So then you'll have to factor in, you're talking around 100 million euro or 99 million euro every year permanently from then on. And one suggestion that was made to me by a politician was, if you knocked a euro off, let's say, your welfare increases that you're going to bring in the budget, mm-hmm. that would fund that. So you'll find a bit of tinkering around the edges to make it happen. There'll also be calls on them to kind of have further reductions in a universally, not universal way, in a targeted way, which is, I suppose, is what you're talking about, of families who might need it more, who might have more kids in college, or maybe who are at a financial disadvantage. And I think for James Lawless, the verdict this week politically is that he kind of was showing maybe some of his ministerial inexperience, because he went out and spoke logic. It's logical that if you don't have a cost of living package, you're not going to have the thing that was in the cost of living package previous years. But what people would have expected of him maybe in government was the political new of saying, we haven't got into the budget yet. And the anxiety about saying, OK, we're going to do this, is if you say now this is a budgetary measure you're going to do, you're going to have to say all your other budgetary measures as well, which I'm very open to hearing, but which the government obviously don't want to get into this early.
You see, if you have more government subvention when it comes to college and to third level, Pather, you're going to have pressure then on the colleges to reduce their costs, take in more students, and perhaps there'll be a quality issue there. You know, the less people pay as individuals.
Well, first of all, I agree with Brenda. I'm not a fan of universal funds. I'm not a fan of once-offs. But the fact is that this is baked into people's budgets for a couple of months' time. And that's a fact in this. And in terms of the 115,000 euro threshold, that's for the deletion of the whole cost. But in actual fact, those costs start to appear after about 50,000 euros in income. And the background of this is so many families are busted in terms of the cost of living crisis. While the inflation rate has come down, the cost of living hasn't come down. And, you know, the students are obviously paying enormous fees in terms of rents currently. Energy costs and taxes. The government took in 4.1 billion euros in energy taxes last year, which was the highest in the history of the state. We're the second highest country in terms of electricity costs in the whole of the European Union. So, you know, we are dealing with families who are on middle incomes, who are literally asleep at night, or awake at night wondering how they're going to pay for things, who are going into overdrafts on a monthly basis to cover costs. This is a very, very serious issue for people in terms of those costs. So I do think as well, in terms of the funding for universities, the government squirreled away 8 billion euros in a budget surplus last year. Mm-hmm. The budget surplus this year is expected to be bigger. I do understand that universities are under phenomenal pressure in terms of funding. In actual fact, one of the biggest problems with doctors at the moment is that 51% of undergrad students in medical schools are students from outside of the EU. And the reason that's the case is they're dependent upon those funds.
They pay a lot of money.
A quarter of a million euros that they pay for their degree to fund the rest of the universities. Mm-hmm. But the problem is most of those individuals will want to go home and work in their own countries after they graduate, which means they're lost to the crisis of doctors that we have here at the moment. So I do believe that tax is the best way to judge a person's ability to pay. Through the taxation, we have a surplus. Out of that surplus, we should be paying for our education system.
Neil, could you target that? Could you target the help with the college fees? Would that be a better way to do it?
Well, firstly, I'll make this point. I don't believe access to education is some sort of universal benefit thing. I think we have free access to primary level education since 1967, or secondary level education since Donal O'Malley in 1967. Very bravely, Niamh Brannock, under the Fine Gael Labour government, brought in free access to third level. And that's been eroded for various reasons over time, where we have a large contribution. I fundamentally believe, from an economic point of view, as well as a social point of view, for a small, open economy like Ireland, having free access to third level is a good thing. And we should continue to work that. But now we're going to move to it on a permanent basis, not using cost of living measures. That's something that I ideologically believe in. I have no issue with looking at universality in certain areas. I just don't consider education as a benefit. It is absolutely an investment. Investment in a society and economy. But just one thing, Pather said we're squirreling away our tax surplus, but he's the same person who'll say that it's a windfall tax and we're over-reliant on receipts from large multinationals. We're not squirreling that away. We've set up two very clear wealth funds to invest that money to make sure, one, we have it on an occasion should there be a rainy day, as we see with looming clouds economically in the global scheme. And secondly, so we can invest that to make a return. We're not just getting it in and spending it. We're going to make sure, by the way, third level institutions got a massive increase in their direct funding from the state last year. We're continuing to increase funding on a capital basis in third level as well as a current basis.
Okay, listen, let's move on because we had a new study this week from Professor John Doyle at DCU, and Professor Doyle found that the cost of Irish unity would be €3 billion in the first year, which is a relatively modest sum, and then he has it decreasing over time. Brenda, is now the time to be talking about Irish unity?
I saw that Micheál Martin responded to that by calling it nonsense and saying this is about reconciliation, it's not about revenue, and it's not going to be. And I mean, the previous costing that we heard, I think, was $20 billion for the year. So this makes it certainly much more affordable if that is the
only option. That was John Fitzgerald's assessment, wasn't it?
Yeah. There was two separate reports that pitched it around that level. If cost was the only obstacle, then, you know, obviously this is something that should prompt a conversation. But it's not, and we know it's not.
But is Irish unity not a thing where everyone says, yeah, that'd be lovely, and then when you tell them how much it's going to cost, they go, oh no, we'll wait, we'll pass on that for a while?
I don't think that cost is the obstacle. I really don't. I mean, I was just looking at the report this week from the Lord Mayor of Belfast removing the portrait of the president from the wall
Michael D.
Parlour. It doesn't match the decor, apparently. I mean, we do have a long way to go. This is a DUP mayor, and the previous mayor, the Sinn Féin mayor, had installed it. So we have a long way to go that has very, very little to do with cost.
Mm-hmm. Patter?
I think this is a really exciting time. All of the key determinants in terms of a long-held objective of so many Irish people are now coming to a situation where it's really likely that we're actually going to see Irish unity in our time. If you look at the demographics and even the polls in the north of Ireland, the majority of young people in the north of Ireland actually want to see Irish unity. The majority of people in this state want to see Irish unity. And now we're actually seeing that there's an economic benefit in relation to Irish unity. A bigger domestic market, more influence in the in the European Union, getting rid of the duplication of all the departments that happen across our country. And I think that, you know, we should be grasping this, preparing for this through a New Ireland Forum, bringing all the political parties and all the civic groups together. And, you know, mapping out that system. But I do believe that Fianna Fáil...
Do we not have that with the shared island thing?
But Micheál Martin stated very clearly that this is not about United Ireland. He stated that the shared island project is not about United Ireland. Micheál Martin, I believe, for narrow political interests, doesn't want to see a United Ireland. Because they will
say... Leo Varadkar is working away on it, though, isn't he?
It is great, but why is it the case that, you know, that Damascus experience is only experienced by Fine Gael Taoiseachs after they retire from office. When they're in office, when they can do something about it, they don't seem to have the same interest in it. But here's the key point. For Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, their narrow self-interest means that if there's unity, they're smaller parties, they're regional parties. They will have less influence in creating a government after unity. And therefore, it is against their own party interests to work towards unity.
Do you really think that is it? Or is it about the potential cost, which is terrifying for any government?
So for example, the key element in a functioning economy is self-determination. The people in Dundalk are the people in Uri are just as bright as the people in Dundalk. The people in Dungannon are just as enterprising as the people in Monaghan. The people in Derry are just as hardworking as the people in Letterkenny. The reason why the North is an economic backwater is because the London government are only interested in the home counties. Even the North of England, Scotland and Wales suffer economically because it doesn't have the same attention. The reason for our relative economic prosperity at this moment is because we make decisions about our own economy in this country. And that's the ingredient that's missing in the north of Ireland.
Neil, are you as excited about a united Ireland as Pather is?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a great report. Pather and I have sat on similar panels for Ireland's future talking about the real opportunities that united Ireland offer economically as well as socially. And one of the great options available to people in Northern Ireland at the moment is that unity actually gives them a path into the European Union. Because let's not forget that our common membership of the European Union, I hope Patter agrees with me, is one of the big parts of our fortune.
But if the cost was €3 billion in the first year, as this report says, it would be very doable, right? It would be very doable.
Yeah, I've no issue with the cost, to be honest. €3 billion, €12 billion, €20 billion. I think it's...
Sure, we've loads of money.
No, it's not that. Because fundamentally, Claire, I believe it's an investment. I think if we take that cost in the initial stage, there will be a massive return economically as well as socially. But actually how you get towards unity is difficult. And it's not about costs.
What is the government doing about getting there?
So previously, when I wrote a paper towards a New Ireland, I called for an Oireachtas committee on a path towards unity. Mark Daly, as Gaelic of the Senate, established that in the last one, and I put together options. And I fundamentally believe the Shared Island project is the first step, because it's that level of reconciliation. I live as, I don't know exactly, Brenda, what you called it, but I live in this part of Dublin. And I had coffee with 10 friends this morning after the drop off at summer camp. And I was the only one who'd been across the border since COVID. And I think, how do we break down that invisible barriers that more people from this jurisdiction spend more time in Northern Ireland? And equally, my uncle Dixon from Ballinahinch comes down to the south more often. That's where we need to work at. That's where the Shared Island can achieve the things where a portrait in a parlour isn't the biggest obstacle going forward. Let's supercharge that, because ultimately, whenever we get the chance to vote in this referendum, it won't be Pat or I who make that decision to call a referendum. It'll be the British Secretary of State in Northern Ireland, as per the Good Friday Agreement.
Do you think the support amongst people here in the Republic for United Ireland is a mile wide but an inch deep, that once you start to interrogate it, people back away, particularly when it comes to the issue of cost?
No, I think the issue is no one knows what a United Ireland is. Just like the Brexiteers never knew what Brexit looked like, and just like those advocating for Scottish independence hadn't done their homework on what an independent Scotland looked like. People want to know, is United Ireland an extension of this jurisdiction and its constitutional format to the entire island? Or, as I hope it will be, is it a new island that actually embraces the unionist minority, perhaps the way my ancestors weren't embraced in 1922?
Jen, can I come to you on this?
Yes.
For your thoughts. Why? I mean, do you agree with what Pather says, that we have Leo Varadkar speaking very enthusiastically now about a United Ireland, but when we have a Fine Gael Taoiseach in office, they don't seem to follow it with such vigour? Why is that?
Yeah, it's interesting, and I agree. I saw Leo Varadkar putting up Instagram stories about it, etc. So very much still on his mind. And I think, to paraphrase kind of different things that Simon Harris has said down through the last couple of years, United Ireland is nowhere near the top of his priority list. He's constantly talked about the cost of living and other issues as being the top of the priority. But I think that exactly what Neil said is the exact problem. No one knows what a United Ireland is. And you have these different studies that show between 3 billion and 20 billion. But when you get into the nitty-gritty of it, that's when you get kind of confused faces. What do you do about the flag? What do you do about the national anthem? Are you happy to pay 152 million euros a year to bring Northern Ireland pay and pensions in line with what's in the Republic? Are you happy for that to last a decade? When you get into the cultural aspect of it, I think that's when people say, well, hold on a second. And we haven't got into that at all. And one party that absolutely will want to get into it is Sinn Féin, who want to put it right back at the top of their agenda.
Pather, you want to say something, and you've got about 15 seconds to say it.
Don't let those questions, valid questions, create inertia. Let those questions actually create a process where we start to sketch out the answers to those now.
All right, we leave it there. Thank you all very much for coming in. That brings us to the end of the programme. Thank you very much for listening. Do have a lovely weekend.